is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
Six after on this Tuesday, an apartment building balcony collapsing early today in Berkeley, California. At least five people dead, eight others injured, some seriously. Many of the injured have critical life-threatening wounds, in fact, according to Officer Jennifer Coates, a spokesman of the Berkeley Police Department, and that according to the Associated Press, moving across the wire at this hour. Ireland's foreign minister said on Twitter that Irish citizens are among the dead in this collapse. It is with great sadness that I confirm that a number of young Irish citizens have lost their lives, while a number of others have been seriously injured following the collapse of a balcony in Berkeley, California, early today. That's Charlie Flanagan, Ireland's Minister of Foreign Affairs and Trade. We don't know exactly what is going on here. My heart goes out to all the families and loved ones of the deceased and those who have been injured by this appalling accident. My department in Dublin stands ready to provide all possible consular assistance to the Irish citizens affected by the tragedy. Police received a call about the incident shortly before 1 local time Tuesday, and when officers arrived, they found the balcony on the fourth floor of the building at Kittredge Street had disintegrated. The building just 2 blocks away from the University of California, Berkeley campus. We just don't know what happened. Officers talking to people on the scene. Coates said she also didn't have information on the identities of the victims, including their ages or gender. We don't have a lot of specific detail at this point because they are still trying to work through it all. The building has apartments in the upper floors and retail shops on the ground floor, and this story is just beginning to develop at this point. We'll keep an eye on this one, of course, for you. Overnight, also, the number one terrorist we've taken out since Osama bin Laden, smoked with an American drone strike, vaporized. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula confirming early today that its leader and the terror organization's second-in-command, Nasser al-Wuhashi, had been killed in a U.S. drone strike in Yemen. The video statement released by the terror group's media wing confirmed al-Wuhashi's death and said that his deputy, Qasim al-Rimi, had been named as the AQAP's new leader. In the name of God, the blood of these pioneers make us more determined to sacrifice, he said. Let the enemies know that the battle is not with an individual. The battle led by crusaders and their agents is colliding with a billion-member nation. There was no immediate statement from U.S. officials on this, as we do not tend to comment on such things. Meanwhile, back to the conversation that I was working through in the last hour when it comes to the Advanced Climate Station data showing that the U.S. is in a cooling trend, despite what the people on the left would have you believe. According to advanced data, we're in a cooling trend. And now Pope Francis is weighing in on climate change with his theology, and make no mistake, many of those on the green movement, it's a theology, it's a religion. But Pope Francis weighing in on climate change with a 192-page screed deploring world leaders for their lack of action on the issue. And like I said, I've said for a very long time, climate change is a lot more about theology than actual scientific consensus. It seems that millions of people are willing to take the dire predictions of doom and gloom and faith. The world's going to end. It's all over. Run. Run, chicken little. Now the Pope is weighing in and will later this week deliver his nearly 200-page tome on the subject. Now here's the thing, it wasn't supposed to be released until Thursday, but a Spanish paper got their hands on it. A Spanish newspaper got their hands on it and decided to release it early, much to the chagrin. Much to the chagrin of the pontiff. You know, I don't know. Is it really the place of the head of the Catholic Church to weigh in on this? I suppose it is. But some Catholics say no. At least one that I'm aware of. They say that they don't think this is the place. I think this is not the place for the Pope myself, but I'm not Catholic, so I'll leave that to the Catholics to decide. But it seems odd. Again, the U.S. Climate Reference Network says that NOAA has been fiddling with the data and making it appear as if the Earth is getting warmer when, in fact, it has been on a cooling trend around the globe. So now the Pope weighs in. That'll be coming out on Thursday, a 192-page screed. You can find out what the Pope thinks about global warming, as if it matters.
I think that the world is getting warmer, and we must take care of people.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Excellency.
Move along. God bless you.
Thank you, Your Excellency. That's my Pope. Is that pretty good, Alex? Spot on and accurate, Alex says.
Thank you, Alex. Bless you. Bless you, my son. Move along. Bless you, my son. Move along. Don't touch my hand.
Yeah, there you go. Can you imagine this? I saw this. This happened while I was gone. Maybe Shane, you can explain this to me, because this is something I don't understand. But apparently, according to a CNN poll that came out when I was, and I've had this, and I was looking through this. Did you know that George W. Bush is now more popular than Barack Obama? Did you know that a CNN poll says that George W. Bush is more popular? It's been out for a few days, apparently. Somehow I missed it. Not only is he more popular than President Obama, a majority of Americans now view the former president in a positive light. 52%. Looking back, going, George W. Bush, the good old days. Really, I mean, George W. Bush, the good old days. I mean, is Obama that bad? It's a communications business. That's the way that works. Oh, no, his mic's not on. See, that's why we need buttons in here. We're going to get this fixed.
Today.
Today, yeah. Anyhow, do you think Obama is really that bad that people are, George W. Bush, yes. The good old days?
Yes.
But why? I mean, people have differences. People didn't like, you know, George W. Bush that were Democrats, and people didn't like Bill Clinton that were Republicans.
They thought that Bush went into Iraq illegally with misinformation, which everybody had the same misinformation. But Barack Obama, the most transparent presidency in history, has proven to be very secretive, very inept, and the people who are on the fence, the independents, have figured it out.
For the large part, but see, here's the crazy thing. I think that if Obama ran again today, he might just win again.
I've started to see those the conspiracy theory where there will be a third
Term. Presidency. Yeah,
they did the same thing with Clinton.
And the same thing with George W. Bush. The people on the left. Oh my God, he's going to declare martial law and never leave the White House.
Yeah. I started to see it pop up now,
which would be a really poor plan on Obama's part, considering. Yeah, you know, he armed Americans better than anybody in history. He convinced more people to buy firearms than anybody in history. It's 14 after the hour. The hotline number, 888-900-9966. What are your thoughts? It's the Steve Gruber Show.
The Steve Gruber Show. Jump starting your day with the news that matters.
Technology too much, see. In order to do this program properly, I rely on technology, and most folks, I believe, in my position, do the same. The problem being, if your computer won't move on the internet because the internet's moving slowly, it slows down your ability to do the program, and it makes me wonder how many people could actually survive without the technology they have every day they've come to rely on. It's become almost indispensable. I wonder how many people out there, you go back to Y2K. Remember that, of course.
Oh, yeah. So I was filling up gallon jugs of water just in case.
Oh, yeah. And with your tinfoil hat on, or were you still just making that after the fact?
Oh, no, no, no. I had it ready, at the ready.
Right. By the way, Governor John Kasich will be in town here in Okemos, Michigan tonight. If you want to know more about that, you can, let me see here, the website is icgop.org. IC, that's IncomeCountyGOP.org.
Is this an open meeting?
Well, you don't have to say your name. You know, it's not a 12-step deal.
What I'm saying is, yeah, 12 steps.
My name is Shane. Hi, Shane. How you doing?
I'm a registered Republican.
Republican, Democrat, recovering Democrat, whichever it is. Yes, it's open. Let me see here. According to what I'm seeing here, tickets are $20.
Okay.
Include Horace DeVore's.
Are you, I assume you're attending. Are you emceeing?
No, I'm just attending. I'm just gonna heckle from the crowd.
Oh,
Ivy move. And I are just going to heckle from the crowd. We're going to put on our Sunday best, you know. No, of course we're going, because I've told you for a long time, you know this. I've been saying that John Kasich is what I consider probably the best candidate.
Well, you met him before when you were in Columbus working.
Yeah.
You interviewed him, right?
Many times. Well, he was a congressman. Yeah, he was a congressman from what, 1983 through 2001. So my tenure at NBC News there in Columbus, I was... Oh, I interviewed him on several occasions because he was right there.
Right.
You know, and I thought that John Kasich was a really decent guy. Then, of course, he went on to Fox News, where he had a career there on television. And that's what I think he is. That's why I think he's interesting. He has 18 years as a congressman. So he has foreign, Homeland Security and foreign affairs and international experience there. And as a congressman, he understands how things work. It's like he knows how the machine works from the inside, right? And then he goes on and becomes a governor, a two-term governor, in a state that is probably as critical to the Republicans as any particular state on the map, Ohio. If you don't win Ohio, you don't become president, period.
Right. Now, where's he from, Columbus?
He was born in Pennsylvania.
Right.
Born in a little town in Pennsylvania, which I think would be a brilliant move. The place for him to go announce his presidency is in Pennsylvania. He's already got Ohio. He won by a landslide in Ohio. The brilliant move would be go to Pennsylvania, announce there, and try to put Pennsylvania into play for him. Because if he was able to carry Ohio and Pennsylvania, he would be the 45th president of the United States.
Well, he would have a good... If he gets the nomination, he'll carry Texas, I'm sure.
Well, Texas automatic. Yeah, there's a certain... You'll get Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi... South Carolina, maybe North Carolina. There's a certain group of states you're going to get automatically. Indiana's always going to go your way. It's the states like Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, Colorado, New Mexico. That's the group of states you have to look at. But, you know, here's what I would think would be a brilliant move. Let me just put this on. Maybe when I talk to you, Governor, let me tell you what you ought to do. Let me just campaign. a little unsolicited advice from Gruber. Once you get nominated governor, your running mate, a lot of folks are going to say pick Scott Walker, and I like Scott Walker. But if Scott Walker does not become your nominee, I think that he has more value in Wisconsin and then doing some things maybe future-wise in the administration. But Susana Martinez might be the best running mate that Kasich could pick for a variety of reasons. First of all, she's Hispanic, she's a woman, and she's the governor of a Democratic state, granted only 5 electoral votes in New Mexico, but as the governor of New Mexico, which is a Democratic state, I say again, it where is. She as a Republican, as a woman, as a Hispanic, has become governor, proven herself as a strong leader, she might be very, very useful. You know, I would say the same about Nikki Haley, but Nikki Haley is the governor of South Carolina, of Indian descent, from the nation of India, not Native Americans, obviously. Has less value because South Carolina is going to go your way anyway. And Nikki Haley is very well thought of in South Carolina from the people I talked to there. But I think Susana Martinez might be the smart move. That's good money right there. Anyhow, John Kasich will be in town. The tickets are $20. It's tonight. I know it's short notice. Listen, I'm not the entertainment director. But if you want to know more, you can go to icgop.org. And here's another, but what this is more evidence of the product of Michigan being more important because the primary date was moved up. You remember how the National Republican Party went crazy, was all angry. Let me tell you something. We here in Michigan benefit greatly because the state Republican Party said, you know what, we need to move our primary up sooner. I think it's in March, which is key. After Mitt Romney took Michigan the last time around, he was able to cruise from there, but it was extremely important because he still had a race on his hands at that point. Rick Santorum was still nipping at his heels at that point, and he was able to move forward and move on to the nomination. So there it is. There's my dream ticket for you. Kasich Martinez. I mean, you need the Hispanic vote to win, right? In places like Colorado, in Florida, in Texas, in California even. The Hispanic vote is important to you. So bring a Hispanic woman onto the ticket and go with it.
Is the Republican pool of candidates the most diverse of any place ever?
By far. African-Americans, women, men. It's a great field. It's big. It'll get pared down.
Right.
25 after the hour on a Tuesday, it is the Steve Gruber Show.
This is the Steve Gruber Show, bringing you the news and newsmakers that affect you most.
It is 33 after the hour. The hotline's open as it is most days. 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. Matt is on the line in Okemos. Matt, what are you thinking today?
Well, I heard Bill Clinton the other day, I don't know if you heard him, talking about people owning guns. And he said that he doesn't want unintended consequences happening with all these people with guns.
Mm.
So in other words, he's saying he would rather have intended consequences with people without guns.
Exactly. Unintended consequences, like what? We intend to defend ourselves? We intend to look out for ourselves?
Right. What he's saying is you'd rather have intended consequences, like what happened in Sandy Hook, with people without guns.
I just work here. I'm just trying to make a living. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. But he also, I agree with him that Hillary did nothing wrong, because I heard him on this commercial, and he said, it's all perfectly legal what Hillary's done here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and morally reprehensible. Matt, you're a good man, and thank you for stopping and checking in with us. Thank you so much.
No problem.
There you have it. Matt, checking. You can do the same. 888-900-9966. Our next guest, Megan Barth from ReaganBaby.com here. Speaking of the Clintons, and because they're like the gift that keep on giving, Megan, welcome back to the program.
It is, and thanks for having me back. I think we're going to be talking a lot. It's one scandal after another.
Well, you know, you and I can talk. Hillary Clinton's not going to talk to anybody. In fact, the pool reporter is going to get thrown right off the bus, you know, because we don't even need a pool reporter with Hillary. They'll just tell you what you need to know in press releases, and we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we're going to rewrite American history by destroying emails, and then we're also going to make sure the press writes what we want them to write.
Absolutely. In fact, those destroying emails, we need to get to the Lois Lerner story at some point, but there's just too much on the plate here. Speaking of plates, $2,700 per for the Dallas trial lawyers that turned out for Hillary to give her, a few million more. Held an $11.4 million mansion. I was reading this story, Megan, about how they want to basically do this developing of neighborhoods so that we have, you know, housing developments in wealthy neighborhoods and kind of, you know, share the wealth type thing. I think we should build one in Brooklyn Heights, right there next to Hillary's campaign headquarters, so all those multimillionaires can understand how it's good to have that diversity, that cultural infusion of different types of folks. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they could solve the homeless problem, too, that they rally against, the income disparity, by just adopting one homeless person. Each liberal could adopt one homeless person, bring them into their home, you know, feed them, clothe them, you know, make them work around the house, and homeless problem solved. But, you know, that's not the liberal cause. Everyone else has to do it for them. It's everybody else's money they like to spend and blame everybody else for the problems that their policies have created.
$25 trillion.
Dallas mansion in which she raised a couple million dollars. And the valets that were parking the Bentleys were making $10 an hour. 4 days later, she's championing for $15 an hour.
Right. She should worry about that. I mean, those valets should have walked off, just like your article said. Should walk out of here. Either it's $15 an hour or nothing.
That's right. And let everyone else play Find the Bentley. You know, and Hillary Clinton was encouraging the SEIU on the call of a few days later to go march in the streets. You know, you shouldn't have to, but we need you marching out there. So I say, valets, go march.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. You know, Amy, here's the crazy thing, though. Hillary Clinton launched her campaign, really, in effect, with her book tour last summer that was a complete disaster. There's some warehouse somewhere stuffed with her book because nobody bought the thing. And then she had this this initial rollout campaign announcement on a video that looked, well, strangely, eerily like her rollout 8 years ago. And now we've got, like, Hillary Clinton 3.0 launch on well, what you called Welfare Island, which I think is a great way to put it. And still, she gets no traction to speak of. I've said it for a very long time. I've said it for months. I've said it for years. I do not believe that Hillary Clinton will get the nomination. I could be proven wrong, but I think she is damaged goods. And if she does get the nomination, I don't think there's any way she ever becomes president of the United States.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on the latter point. I do think she's going to get the nomination because of her ability to raise money. You know, it was first $1 billion she's going to raise. Now I'm hearing echoes of $2 billion. You know, is that money coming from the lottery winners of the world? No, it's coming from the same people that actually gave to her foundation. You know,
you mean it's not coming from the valets?
So, you know, all of the one percenters are going to get behind Hillary and raise at least $1 billion for her. And I don't think that the DNC is going to look away from that type of money. So I'm kind of hoping she gets the nom because all of the questions she is going to have to answer. She can't, you know, coddle the press and make them write what she wants them to say when it comes to a debate. And with as many people as we have on the right looking to debate her, questions are going to be asked and she's going to have to answer.
What kind of gaffe machine do you think she'll be in a debate? I mean, seriously, I mean, because she is going to be held to account for the emails, for the $25 million. And by the way, while I'm thinking about the $25 million, my brother made a suggestion, too, that you could take about 80 people, give them $250,000 a piece, just take $20 million from Bill and Hillary, and you could help share, and they could pay their fair share. They could pay their fair share and help out some less fortunate people. But in a debate, back to that where we are, she's going to be pressed right to the wall.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, I've been watching Carly, and Carly is one of the very few candidates that have announced that every time she's in front of the camera, she's asking the tough questions and putting Hillary on the defense. And that's exactly what needs to be done. All of the secrets, all of the lies, all of the hypocrisy needs to be thrown directly at her feet. And, oh, by the way, I don't know if you heard, but Sidney Blumenthal is going to be on the Hill testifying about Benghazi. They've come up with at least 300 emails that were never released, half of which are from Sidney.
And what does this mean to you as you look at it?
Well, what does this mean to me? Well, 300 emails, that's certainly part of our history, especially, and she obviously was using the server, her private server, for State Department business. So there's another lie that we've caught her in, over 300 emails specifically related to Benghazi. So the truth isn't out about Benghazi. You know, the science hasn't been settled about Benghazi, has it?
Don't ask me more questions. It's settled science. All right.
So, yeah, everything's just settled. You know, we can't do discovery, you know, because, again, Hillary wants to control the narrative. She wants to control her image. And by constructing a private server and then unilaterally destroying emails or withholding emails,
right,
is creating her own, writing her own history.
So hold on. Before we spend too much time here, I want to spend 1 minute about exactly on, you know, Jeb is also in the race now as of yesterday. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple more candidates still to come. Playing poker, who would be your guess at this point to become the Republican nominee? And you've got about, you know, a few seconds to sort that out.
I think it's going to be a dark horse. And I think it's either going to be Walker with maybe Rubio as his running mate. I would probably put some money on a Walker-Rubio ticket.
All right. My money's on Kasich, but okay.
Yeah?
It is. He's in town today, too. I've been saying that for a year and a half. I've been saying John Kasich is the most qualified person to become the next president of the United States. And I'm going to stick with my prediction.
There's a dark horse for you.
Well,
okay.
Well, he's not really that dark of a horse. 18 years in Congress, two-time
but
governor.
Someone that you don't really expect who announced, you know, after that's kind of that you think is going to rise to the top relatively quickly in a presidential nom.
I do.
He's not getting a lot of press.
Well, he will. He just has to make the top 10 for now, Megan. And when he goes and fillets his opponents on the debate stage, we're good.
True.
Megan Barth, always, see, there we go. Now we got horses in this race. Megan Barth, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
ReaganBaby.com if you want to find out more and read what Megan writes about. Good stuff. ReaganBaby.com. It's all right here on the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.
The Steve Gruber Show. Jump starting your day with the news that matters.
After the hour, my next guest, one of my favorites, Larry Elder here, host of the Larry Elder Show, LarryElder.com to find out more. My black libertarian Hollywood friend, who I don't know how he does it out there, but he does it. He does it with a big smile on his face, with a little bit of humor and wit and common sense. Larry, welcome back to the program.
Steve, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, golly, our transracial black professor, Rachel right. Dolezal, has apparently decided to throw in the towel and resign. Although she did it after NBC contacted her. I'm wondering how much she got paid, but apparently she's making the NBC circuit. If she hasn't already this morning, then very soon.
Right. Well, Steve, you started out by referring to me as black, which is kind of striking, since I'm such an Uncle Tom and a sellout. A lot of people don't think I'm black, which is fascinating here. The NAACP, as you know, is backing her, or at least gave a statement of support. That's the same organization, the NAACP, that ought to be renamed National Association for the Advancement of Certain People, because they didn't support Clarence Thomas when he was nominated for the Supreme Court, didn't support Mia Love, which she ran for Congress in Utah, didn't support Star Parker, which she ran for Congress out here in California. Both of them were actual, true blue black women, but their sin is that they're conservative, so therefore they're not even considered to be black. Ebony Magazine, every year, Steve, has something called the 100-plus Most Influential Black Americans, and every year they exclude Clarence Thomas. How can Clarence Thomas not be an influential American, let alone black American, but he's not there because he's conservative?
Right.
Tom Sowell is never there. Tom Sowell, of course, published about 40 books. He's probably the second or third most widely read person in the English language. He is not mentioned as an influential person in Ebony, nor is Walter Williams, the former chair of the Economics Department at George Mason University, also a very widely read syndicated columnist, not mentioned in Ebony as one of the three most prominent black people in America because they are conservative, so therefore they're not even black. But this white woman who lies and says she's black is embraced.
Well, it's bizarre. and let me just say, Larry, let me apologize for being insensitive off the top of this segment of the program here. I mean, for me to call you black, I don't mean to be insensitive. I know that you're a transracial white man.
That's right.
And a trans political liberal.
I'll give you another example, Steve. Just about a month ago, I fly to New York to interview with Al Jazeera. I have a debate against two black females who study something like African studies or black studies, whatever the hell it is. And the topic was whether America is still a racist country. And I said, racism is no longer a major problem in America anymore. I mean, look at the primary thing that anthropologists say is an indicator as to whether or not people get along, and that is interracial marriage. And in the 50s, only 4% of people supported black-white marriages. Right now, that number is 87%, and that's almost 100% because 10%
nobody
of the American people
anymore.
Believe that Elvis is alive. 8% believe if you send him a letter, he'll get it. So you write off 10% of the American people. So that's about as high as you can get.
Exactly.
And I said stuff like that. Obama got a higher percentage of the white vote than did John Kerry. So
Obama
was being discriminated against by white voters, Kerry was discriminated against by white voters even more.
It's very true. Now, hold on, because I don't know if you went and did any research on Rachel Dolezal to speak of, but I happened to find this one precious piece of video where, as the professor of Africana Studies at Eastern Washington University, she did this whole dissertation on the racism of black women's hair.
Right.
The racism of black women's hair. This is what we're teaching. The more frightening about this is not the fact that this woman has mental problems or whatever her deal is. More frightening is that this is what we're teaching our young people in qualified, accredited universities, Larry. It's sad and frightening.
Yeah, I saw that. And she stood up and talked about her hair as well and gave different gradations of kind of hair and all this stuff. And here she is, white. It's fascinating. But let me just wrap up what I was saying earlier. So I said to these two women that racism is no longer a major problem in America anymore, Steve. And one of them turns to me and says, "Are you really black?" And I said, no, I'm Asian. And my point is, the fact that she didn't agree with me meant that I was no longer a black person. Never mind that I was wrong in her view. Not only was I wrong, I ceased being black. But this woman, Rachel Dolezal, lies to her black husband, lies and gets his job as a police member of the police commission in Spokane, lies and gets her job at that university. And instead of being angry at her for committing fraud, you're finding people saying, well, you know, she philosophically relates to being black, and black really is a mental construct, not really a matter of biology or genetics. So, but Clarence Thomas and Mia Love and Condi Rice and Colin Powell, they're no longer black.
You know, you've identified something bigger here, Larry, that I think we need to put a circle around with a highlighter, too. The point that you've highlighted here, unless you're a victim, unless you identify with the ideology of victimhood, you're not black. Unless you identify with the fact that you have been abused, taken advantage of by the man, always white, of course, unless you're a victim, you're not black enough.
Well, that's right, Steve, but not just blackness, anything. You're not even a woman. Kay Bailey Hutchinson, the conservative Republican from Texas, was called a female impersonator by Gloria Steinem because she's a Republican.
Right, because she doesn't agree with them, so therefore
exactly. So,
the personal
attacks. So you are no longer a black person, no longer a Latino, what Harry Reid said. I don't understand why anybody of Hispanic heritage would ever be a Republican. End of quote, said Harry Reid. So you're not even a Hispanic if you are Alberto Gonzalez, if you're Enrique Estrada. Dick Durbin whipped out the race card when Loretta Lynch's nomination was held up for all sorts of different reasons having nothing to do with race. This SOB voted against the confirmation of Condi Rice, voted against the confirmation of Janice Rogers Brown, who now sits on the D.C. Court of Appeal, voted against Enrique Estrada, who pulled his name after 2 years because it never came up to a vote, voted against Alberto Gonzalez, the first Hispanic AG. And here he is pulling out the race card and saying, your failure to vote for Loretta Lynch means she's at the back of the bus. And nobody called Dick Durbin a racist when he voted against all these blacks because they knew they voted against him because they were conservatives.
Because they're victims. It's the theology of victimhood, Larry. You have to be a victim. You have to be on that train to demand change because without victims, there would be no Al Sharpton, for example.
Absolutely.
20 seconds to the last word.
I use the word victocrat. The left has trained black people to think like victocrats. A victocrat is somebody who believes the man is conspiring against them. So first they have to convince blacks that they're victims. Then they have to convince blacks that these guys over here, Republicans, Tea Partiers, black Republicans, well, they're victimizers. And then, of course, that means we are the salvation. We're the savior. Go in there and pull that lever 95% for us, and we'll battle for you. We'll take the battle of social justice because this is all about. The country remains a racist country, and the Democrats over here, we're the ones with the white horse. We're the ones that are going to defend you.
Oh, did you say white horse? Hey, everybody, it's the Larry Elder Show. It's LarryElder.com. Larry, always a pleasure.
My pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
There you have it, LarryElder.com. You can find the Larry Elder Show and find out more on his white horse, 52 after the hour.